Location number 14976. Joseph Weir, real final 11.
Mr. Weir, real 11. You were recalled to brigade after you'd presented with your medal, Mr. Weir. What happened to you then?
Well, we were told we were going to Paris, which was a tonic for any soldier. And it was a British Army exhibition, and it was on the Champs-Élysées. So we were going to work there. When we get brigade, there was 12 Green Howard, 12 East Yorks, 12 Durhams. And our Sergeant Major was a great man, Sergeant Hollis BC, Sergeant Major Hollis BC, Green Howard. Well, he had to train us to do guard duty. Well, anybody that knows that the speed we do our drill and the speed East Yorks and Green Howard do theirs is entirely different. When we're marching, it's entirely different. So the Durham lads had to slow down. Green Howard had to bring up, and we went to barracks and we were back and forth, and he finally got us into a decent drill, even for the drill and for the marching, you know. And he paraded in front of the brigadier, and he told us we were going for up to 3 weeks. And I hope we did a good job. Well, when we had the journey over to Paris, and when we got to Paris, here we're stationed in hotels in Dom Pigalle. We're stationed, we got a beautiful hotel. And the exhibition itself was in the Champs-Élysées. We had to go the next morning, and we're filling sandbags and making defences and trying to build part of the desert up. And there was also the Burma. There was a bit of Burma, a bit of France and Normandy, and France in there in the beginning of the war. And it was marvellous, sure. Well, it was all over. Turned out our next job was to be there on the Champs-Élysées for the official opening. And we were there, we all lined up out of the CSM with us. There were two officers from the East Yorks, by the way, but I couldn't taste their names. But they had a good time because we didn't see much of them. The Sergeant Major was in with us. But we stood in the Champs-Élysées here. Montgomery came with a high ranking French officer to open this place. And the guards band were there for a few days. Then after the guards band went away, the ATS band came. So they were actually put in the King George V Hotel. They got the best. But they had to be signed out, these girls, so we used to go and say they would come with us. And we did this guard every day, but then the CSM said, well, what he did after that, the Green Howards would do it one day, the East Yorks the next, and Durham's the next, so you went back to your own drill, and so you just did that hour and a half. Every 3 days, the rest of the time was your own. It was fantastic. We did a show in the Paris Opera House, and did an invasion scene from the Paris Opera House. We first heard the Marco thing coming up. We first heard Glenn Miller's orchestra, and Glenn Miller had just been lost. And of course, not being used to what they had. They did the show once, then they did it again. Because the first was a dress rehearsal, and the next was going back to America, or the world. So we took part in that, and we got interviewed on that. for that show, whichever wherever it went out, different ones had to tell the tale. And but if I were a soldier, got a cushy job. Just it.
What were the French like? The French civilians?
Well, they were very good. They were grateful for everything because we could travel all around because everything was free. The metro and everything was free, and you could travel all around. And of course, the girls were nice as well. You see, we got all of us matched up with one of the girls from the Naffy, you know, and the Asian shows the city.
They didn't.
And for money, you know, it was. The Yanks had been, so we couldn't afford to go into the Folies Bergères, by the way. That was out of our pocket. But the girlfriends at Skipton used to send me tablets of soup. And for tablets of soup, you could get 200 francs, which was very good. And they used to send parcels of soup, because these ones worked in Woolworths. And that's how I kept going.
And there was no resentment towards the British by any of the French?
Not them. No, they were. And of course, I had an old battle dress. You know, very old battle dress. Because remember, I got a battle dress when nobody else could have won. Well, I had an old battle dress. And I sold it to a man that had just come back from the concentration camps. Because they were going about in the blown red and green and white stripes ahead of. They were going about in them, and there was hundreds of them going about in you know, more or less cadging, you know, begging, which is disgraceful as far as we were concerned. But it was hard for them because, you know, some of them used to come to where we were when we were doing the guard duty. We had to do an occasional night duty on this building in the Champs-Élysées, and we used to stand it and we used to give them part of our bait, you know, our sandwiches, and they used to love it. So things were being very bad in Paris at that time. But for us, it was a great time. And there was a big naffy called the Skit Lally, where everybody met, because nearly everybody that was in there had the chaff, the sign on that. They were all employed in Paris, you know, we were the outsiders. But when the exhibition finished, and of course, instead of being there three weeks, we were there about 9 weeks, because it had been that successful, we had to march away from this, and the guards let us march down the Champs-Élysées in front of them, because when we marched up the Champs-Élysées in the first place, we were up their back, so coming back we had the honour of marching down there in front of the guards,
You have your band playing?
The band playing, you see, well, they were playing too slow for us, and too slow for the Green Howards and them, even. So, come back, they let us march down in front of them. But that was, anybody had to have a holiday, we had one then. It was fantastic. I mean, even the equipment was all white equipment. We had to leave that behind in the Pioneer Corps cleaned up. We just had to come dressed, put this on, and then not weren't allowed to take the battles ourselves. No, nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And of course, while we were there, Bastille Night came. No, I don't think any of us had seen anything like it. You know, the way they celebrate Bastille, especially that way being the first one after the war. It was all night dancing, all night singing. It was a fantastic atmosphere. Fantastic atmosphere. And everybody joined in, young and old. Yeah, it was marvellous to see. Mm-hmm.
Were you inspected by any very high-ranking people?
Well, there was, as I say, the first day, Montgomery was there, and there was a top Frenchman there, and I don't know who he was, actually. But every day when we did this guard, there's always so high up to inspect the guard, you know, and because you know they used to say, well, these men are all from the, you could hear the Premier Division of the British Army sort of style, and most of us had decorations, Because when the first when they first applied it, they wanted everybody was there decoration, but they couldn't get the lot. But as I say, there was my old mate Freddie Patterson was there. Him and I were next room to each other because we had single room, but he was next room to me, Freddie. And one of the laddies' name just come for a minute. But he was the CEO's driver. And, we had a really good time.
Who was the CEO?
The CEO at that time was Major Wood. Major Wood. He was back. He was back at Skipton. Right? Major Wood. And when we came back, when the Port Brigade said we had to have 3 weeks leave, we'd have to be for doing a good job. And when we got back on Friday evening to the battalion, told them, RSM says, you'll get your passes at 1 o'clock. You're on the cross country run tomorrow morning. There was a cross country run against the Queen's Regiment. He made us run that. The last 12 men in on that race. And that was, I mean, I'd always enjoyed cross country run, but I wasn't fit for that. He says, I knew you'd had a good holiday.
Did you have any fear that your service might have been extended because of Japan still continuing in
yes,
the war?
Yes, it was, because my pay book's there. I've got Far East, recommend for Far East on the pay book. But, you know, the bomb dropped, and that was the our savior for that.
How did you feel that you might be hauled out of Japan? Or
well, that was a real upset, you know, because you knew your pay book had remarked that you're ready for draft, you know. And I mean, as I say, when we came home, just kept, and we thought this was it. But when you get a pay book marked Far East, and I mean, we couldn't have been far off being actually called up when the bomb dropped in September.
August,
September. We couldn't have been far off being ordered there.
So VJ Day announcement was quite an event for you.
When that bomb dropped in VJ, that was a big thing for me. I mean, if you hear people now saying, oh, the bomb, you kill all those people. If that bomb hadn't dropped, many of our people would have been killed. That's the way I think it was. We, because it was must have been hell fighting over there. I mean, I've talked to the lads itself, but I mean, I was lucky enough not to be there, but it was hell because you didn't know where anybody was. I mean, I'm talking about going over open fields. There was no open fields for them. But our argument of people saying, disgraceful killing all them people with that bomb. I mean, it's the again. But what would have happened if the bomb hadn't dropped? I mean, they might have got it first.
After you leave, then what happened to you then?
After leaving...
You had your 3 weeks leave after coming back from Paris.
3 weeks Paris. I had a good leave. That's where I met... one thing happened on that leave. I met my future wife, a girl that had been out occasionally with pre-war, and her and I got on well, and we later married. But she died and didn't live very long. But as we came back to Skipton, then I was surprised when heard that they were disbanding us all together. And one by one, there was lads getting, and Billy Dussey that was with us, he got released because he was a railway man. They were asking for people like that. They wanted slaters for houses. Because that word come through from Brigade, and it was taken down as slaughterers. And I said, the slaughterers wanted them. It was slaters. And so it was, come down and word come that the battalion was disbanding all together, and there was Major Short there left then, Kenny Bramble, myself, we were the last three. That was the last three to leave the battalion. I went to Sedgefield on the race course, and then again I was being inspected by a young lance corporal that had been in the army about 9 weeks or something, and all the men he was trying to tell what to do with lads that had been in the army during the war, you know. And he says, I'll get you, I'll get you. That was me. He said, oh, get that straight off. You're not in your battalion now, get the straight off. Took the straight off.
So you lost your straight?
I lost my straight. And because Lance Corporal, you can, you know, you can lose it for anything, so to say, just because you had moved out of the battalion. Anyhow, we went there and we stood, was, and they were supposed to do guard. Well, I mean, we used to go and get, you know, there was no, once you got on, you, there was no red tape, sort of thing. All the officers used to come, but you knew exactly what, he used to tell you what time he was coming. But, so I had to, sort of reach the set fields, and,
did you resent being under the orders of young people like this?
This young Lance Corporal, yeah, you know, he was trying to drill you, you know. And he shouted my name out one day, and I stood still and shouted my name, he come young. I says, I'll come when he gives me tape. And he went away and he shouted, we are there, man, and I stepped forward. Because they always used to shout in the paper, then, you know, and this young lad was, because I couldn't, you know, then Japan was, you knew the war was finished and you couldn't care less. But anyway, I got sent from there to Hull.
What date would this be?
It must have been about. No, it'd be January 46, I got sent to Hull. And it was, and I was sent straight under the telephones. And it was a transit camp. And the lads were going there from, they were coming in and just staying there for a few weeks before the demob. Well, I've got sent to Hull, and I think in the earlier part of the program, I mentioned about my father being found in Hull after 20 odd years. Well, I still hadn't seen him, so this night I was on telephone duty, and I rang him. He answered. I told him how it was. His son he had never seen, and the son was now 27. And he didn't know what to do. And that's, he says, where? I says, I'm stationed in Hull, I'm at the camp, and I give him my phone number. Well, they went back. He went back to his family, the two girls and his wife, that we mentioned earlier. Told them who had been on the phone, and they came, but one of the girls came back on the phone, and they wanted to meet us. So they said, will you come down for Sunday dinner? I said, I would. So on the Sunday, I went down. I'd been in the hall, I went to church, I'd come out, and I was getting directions to this place where I would go when the fella stopped me. He says, look no further, son. He says, I'm your dad. So how are you? And things like that. Little conversation. Good of you to come. And he says, the girls are looking forward. And the wife's looking forward. So I went down. And went to this house, a tennis house. And two lovely girls. And, one was the same age as me, one was 20. And whenever I could after that, any spare time, I was with those two girls. And even my father even had the courage to take me to the snooker club that he was a member of and introduced me to as his son. Well, they must have wondered where I had been for 27 years. But as I said earlier, my mom wanted nothing to do with them. when the Newell court case, and actually I've managed all along, and they're all up, and that's it. I want no more of that. So I had a happy time with him for a while, and there'd been an arrangement that he would send my mother £1 a week. So everything was left at that. I went back home. Well, I went from meeting Bob to York.
What date was this?
In March something. 23rd of March, I think.
What was the process of going through DeMob?
Well, you had the medical, DeMob medical, you know, to see it, and I was A1. I joined the army with A, and I finished up as A1. So, you had a medical first, and then you went, and a remarkable thing happened. The first person I saw in the place where I went for my clothing was George Addy, who was one of the lads from Yorkshire that had joined up with me. And he had been with the 11th Battalion all the war. He'd been to Iceland and all that. And yet, we recognised each other straight away. And eventually I got my grey suit, my trilby hat, and tie, and shoes, put it in the box, and went to him. My brother was a porter at the central station. He seen me coming, he run forward to get me bag, and he says, "Welcome home, lad," and took us to the bus and went home. The only thing after that, a few weeks after that, maybe a few months, my mother told me she wasn't getting this pound from Hull. So I went through the Hull and knocked at the door, and the girl opened the door. She says, "Oh, Joe," she says, "don't call father." I says, "No," she says, "it's my 21st birthday party." I says, "I just want to see him." I says, "Just say it's your cousin from Newcastle," which she did. And he came out and he says, "I will." He says, I'll make it up." So I went back, because I didn't realise that there was no train from Hull at night. So that was the first night I've ever stepped in the Salvation Army hostel. But I asked the policeman where I could get a night's sleep. He says, "Do you want to sleep or do you want a woman?" I said, "I want to sleep." He sent us to the Salvation Army hostel. I came back, and that was end of it all. I heard tell he died 2 years later. But it was funny me having to finish up at Hull to see him after all those years.
Did you find it difficult settling into civilian life after all those years in the forces?
Well, there again, there was a good point about it. There was a lot of men the same way. My old pals were coming out of the forces as well. There was a lot of them. And that was my company. Not like when I had to leave early during the war, there was nobody there, but all your pals were coming back, you know. No, that was a bit of leave. And I was lucky one way. I had worked in a chemical factory when I first left school, and I worked there until I went in the army. My job was still there for me, because my mother had lived in the house belonged to them, and so when I come back I went. But I didn't stay very long. I worked in every job where there was money. It didn't matter how hard it was to try and make extra money. Funny enough, the job I had been doing pre-war was being done by an Italian prisoner, captured by the 50th Day in the desert. So small world. And I stayed there a few weeks, maybe a few months. And I was married. Then I was married in 48. My wife died 7 years later. But then I went into Vickers Armstrong's for a better job. It was a better job. Then I was there for a few years. But I was 45 years of age, and work was looking badly there. They were starting to pay off, and it was getting 40 a week. I met a friend and offered us a job with the Providence Clothing Company. I didn't know what it meant, he says, but you'll do it. so he gave us a job straight away, and I went on being a credit salesman, selling anything and everything. And 20 years at that, retired at 65, and here I am now.
Looking back over the war years, and the various people you served with, what was your opinion of the higher command? Did you have any views towards them?
Well, you have views, but can you express them? You know, you have different things. I mean, no, I wouldn't say anything like that. But I mean, you had your views, you know. Because of just being a upstate private, a lance corporal, I mean, you don't get to know everything that's going on. You don't know why it's been done. You know, being a signal, you got a little bit more. But some of the lads in the horse division just, you know, they're just going.
American troops that you came across from time to time, did you form any opinion about those?
Well, as I say, as I also when I went to mend the line, we always told to keep quiet, and yet they're coming over 30 men to mend the line. That's why they lose so many men. They just push men forward. They couldn't care less how many they're killing. That's the way I think of it. I mean, they were just sending a lot of men in.
What was your opinion of the German soldier?
Well, I think the British soldier always had a high respect for the German soldier. No respect for an Italian soldier, but I mean, they had the high respect for I think the Germans were the same to us. You know, man to man. Yes.
Did you ever come across any conscientious objectors during or after the war? Did you have any experience of them?
not to speak to. I tell you what, I did find two or three men shut their tours off on the ship going out to the Middle East. And they finished up on this reburial, which I think that's worse than fighting, picking bodies up and put them in different graves. I think they got a hard job after that.
These were men of the
battalion? Yes. Mm-hmm. There was two or three. Mm-hmm. And there were men that had been to Dunkirk. You know, they had seen that at Dunkirk, and I mean, that had been enough for them.
Do you feel that after the war and the work that you did and the jobs you had to seek and find, that the country had treated you all right? And this wasn't the case after the First World War, was it? In the Second World War, did you feel any resentment?
I think it was much better than the Second World War. As it happened, I had a job that I had promised to go back to, you know. I mean, but a lot of lads didn't. A lot of lads didn't work for a long time, and I mean, they never got the jobs that they were. As Bevan said on the Key side in June, he said there's jobs for everybody, but I mean there wasn't jobs for everybody. There was some lads took it hard, and some lads, well, they hit the drink, didn't they? Mm-hmm. But nothing like the men come back there, and nothing like what was happening to the lads coming out of the army now, were they? None of these diseases from fighting in the Gulf and fighting here and there. And I mean, going to Vietnam, I mean, everybody was just drugged, weren't they? So you can't understand that.
Who was the best officer you served under?
Well, you know. I would have followed him anywhere.
Mm. That was Atkinson.
Atkinson. And as I say, the man that should have had the battalion was Major Wood, George Wood. He was a brilliant man as well, you know. I mean, you just got to look at his declarations. He's a great man. Mm-hmm.